to the Episcopal Herald podcast. I'm Jimmy Abbott, your host for this first edition of our podcast. The Episcopal Herald is an online magazine that imagines, articulates, and analyzes the future Episcopal Church. I'm joined by a couple other people today. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Christine Falstick. I'm the rector of the Episcopal Church of the Epiphany in Houston, Texas.
I'm Eileen O'Brien. I'm a curate at Christ Church Cathedral, also in Houston.
And I should have said, I'm the rector of Holy Comforter Episcopal Church in Spring. So as I said, this is an online magazine. Maybe you've seen some of our stuff already on Twitter and floating around Facebook. But Christine, would you share with us a little bit more about this whole project?
Yeah, well, the Herald is just the result of a group of people who got together. We knew General Convention was coming up, and every time when it does, there's always great publications that give us the news as it's happening of what's going on at General Convention. But we wanted to provide something a little different, to create an online publication that really focuses on analyzing what's happening and not necessarily reporting on everything that's going on, but just lifting up the things that we think are significant and important as we think about the future of the Episcopal Church.
Another one of our goals is to raise up young and diverse voices that aren't always heard within the context of General Convention. And so we'll be coming to you with podcasts and material in Spanish and also representing the voices of young people throughout the church.
All right, so one of the biggest things that happens this summer at General Convention is the election of a new presiding bishop. The current presiding bishop, Catherine Jeffords Shorey, her term has run out. It was a 9-year term, and she decided not to run again, so we'll have another presiding bishop election. Eileen, you've done a little bit of research on all of this, and so what does the presiding bishop even do?
So once elected, the presiding bishop will serve a term of 9 years as the chief pastor to all of the members of the Episcopal Church. The presiding bishop is also an ecumenical officer, a representative within talks with other denominations, other faiths, and a primate. So the presiding bishop will join the leaders of 38 other Anglican provinces in consultation for global good and hopefully for some reconciliation.
And well, then, can I ask, okay, so who are we trying to reconcile? Like, can we just go for it?
Well, obviously, there's been a lot of conflict, right, in the church over the last, since 2003, certainly, but even before that, over issues related to sexuality. And so as we emerge from these conflicts, and I mean, there are still dioceses that are really embroiled in legal battles, right? So as we emerge from these conflicts, obviously, we're looking to be reconciled to our brothers and sisters within the Episcopal Church, but also within the Anglican Communion at large.
So I think it'd be good just to talk a little bit about each of these four candidates, what they're bringing to the table, sort of the conversation that they're having and that's been happening in their diocese. So let's start with Bishop Bredenthal of Southern Ohio.
I think as we approach General Convention, Bishop Bredenthal has definitely done some restructuring work within his own diocese, but as best I can tell, I'm not really sure what he thinks about the task force to reimagine the Episcopal Church's recommendations or other groups' recommendations to change the structure of the church. And so I guess we'll have to wait and see what his perspective is on that.
Okay, so then moving down alphabetical order, Bishop Curry of North Carolina.
Well, Bishop Curry has been a member of the task force to reimagine the Episcopal Church, and also just one of the primary speakers for change in these ways, for changes in structure that help us to carry out the mission of the church, that will help us to travel more lightly. And he's one of the more, I would say, compelling speakers on the Episcopal stage for those changes.
I'll go a little bit out of order. Then we have Dabney Smith of Southwest Florida. He hasn't been too vocal in any of this. It seems that just in what I've been able to glean is that some sort of reticence, some hesitancy for major structural change that is being advocated for in some sections of the church. And then back to you, Eileen, about Bishop Douglas of Connecticut.
Well, Bishop Douglas, like Bishop Breitenthal, has within his own diocese carried out sort of a mini trek, a mini task force to reimagine experience. They've been doing some work with restructuring the deaneries in Connecticut and changing up the diocesan structure.
So that's all the official stuff from Eileen, all the stuff that's been on the Episcopal Church website. Christine, what's happening, what's the conversation around the Episcopal water cooler?
Well, it's a really interesting election because the presiding bishop is really elected by the House of Bishops, and then that name is sent to the House of Deputies for confirmation, which usually they confirm. And so as you look at these four candidates, we can read all the stuff that they've written in response to the questions put out. We can watch their videos. But the bishops themselves meet together on a regular basis. They have relationships, and they know each other, and they are the ones that are voting. So I think it's especially hard for us from the outside looking in to discern where they're going to place their votes.
So I encourage everybody to go onto the Episcopal Herald website. Read the four profiles that we've put up. Also check out the stuff and the videos of each candidate that's on the Episcopal Church's website. And then that's really, I think, all that we know right now about the presiding bishop election. So one of the biggest issues coming up at General Convention 2015 and really coming out of General Convention in 2012 is the issue of the structure of the Episcopal Church, our governance, and how that either helps or hinders our mission and ministry. And there have been a number of different proposals about how to address this. The first one really comes from the Joint Commission on the Structure of the Church. And it's interesting, while parts of the church are talking about streamlining the governance, making it more efficient, the Joint Commission seems to have gone the other way. They have a proposal that General Convention should be no shorter than 10 legislative days, which is longer than it is now. I think part of the concern is that some of the committees and commissions feel that they don't have a chance to fully research and respond and hear testimony on all the resolutions coming through. I think part of the pushback on that is, well, do we really need to be doing all of those resolutions and actually going through that big legislative process for many of those things? So the Joint Commission seems to present the most status quo structure right now out of all these proposals. And I think I'm reading that right. Is that what y'all two hear? You're nodding. That's good. Okay.
I think you have a good sense of it, that it's definitely the most conservative proposal on the board right now.
Right. And not really conservative. We need to, you know, parse that out. Not sure. Conservative theologically, more conservative.
Sustaining the status quo.
Yeah. Okay. So then coming out of the 2012 General Convention, I was not there, but I sort of even on Twitter felt the presence of this moment, this Acts 8 moment that led to the creation of the Task Force to Reimagine the Episcopal Church, TREC. Such a cool word. Christine, do you want to talk at all about TREC?
Yeah, well,
are you a Trekkie?
I don't know. I was at General Convention 2012, and you could feel it in the air. People were very excited about the possibilities of restructuring the Episcopal Church. And so out of that came this mandate to create a task force, as you just said, the Task Force to Reimagine the Episcopal Church. And that group is broadly diverse, representative of lay and clergy. It's got a representation of the geography of the Episcopal Church as well. And so over the last 3 years, they've done a lot of work. They've listened to the church, and I think they've tried to build consensus amongst that diverse group themselves and put forward some resolutions about ways to restructure the church. So that came out, their report with their resolutions came out a few months ago. One is to have a unicameral house at General Convention. That always makes me think of a camel when I say unicameral. But anyways, as it stands now, General Convention meets as two houses, the House of Deputies, which includes clergy and laity, deacons and priests and lay people, and then the House of Bishops, who meet separately.
And so this can definitely create a slowdown in the legislative process, because if you think about it, there's no conference committee to kind of meld people's ideas together like you might have in a state legislature. So if the House of Bishops were to pass a resolution and send it to the House of Deputies, and say the House of Deputies passed it, but with an amendment, it would have to go back to the House of Bishops. And so that can really slow down. And so there was a desire and an idea for everyone to meet together in one room. In addition, Trek proposed eliminating the standing commissions and committees of the Episcopal Church by and large, leaving a few. I think constitutions and canons and liturgy and music would remain, but instead replacing that system with having task forces, much like Trek. And so they proposed that every time there was work to be done after General Convention, you would create a task force with a specific timeline. In addition, they wanted to clarify the roles in the executive offices of 815, which is the headquarters of the Episcopal Church, or TEC, and along those same lines, shrink the size of the Executive Council, which is sort of the governing body in a way between general conventions. As far as how that was all received, well, that's a whole nother question, isn't it? The Trek report came out, and I think there was a lot of excitement around it, and a lot of people wanted to read it and were blogging about it. But I think there was also a feeling, a little bit of disappointment from a lot of people. Some of the resolutions are pretty broadly worded and lacking in detail. But I think the good news of Trek, really, is that it got this conversation going. It sort of created a launching pad for other groups to take these ideas and then refine them in a way. And certainly one of the groups that's done so is the group behind the Episcopal Resurrection website. So maybe, Eileen, do you want to talk about that just a little bit?
Absolutely. So when we're talking about this Episcopal Resurrection website, we're talking about episcopalresurrection.org. And this website was created with a memorial, a message to the church, and with a variety of resolutions that are specific, that are responding to some of the issues that weren't quite closed by the Trek resolutions. And so some of these resolutions are just trying to bring greater clarity, I think, to some of Trek's proposals. So you have some work trying to clarify the officers, eliminate provinces, amend Article 5. But you also have some things in here that are different from Trek's proposals and that are really exciting, I think. One of the things that that I find most exciting about this is the call to mission, the call to really invest now and invest big in planting churches and in revitalizing congregations. And so this is a bold proposal that has a pretty large price tag to it. The church planting resolution has a price tag of about $8.5 million. Ooh. And the revitalizing congregations price tag brings you up to close to, I believe, $10 million. So that's a significant investment. And what the folks who have written this memorial to the church are saying to us is that now is the time to make that investment, and we can't afford to not make it. The other piece that I find intriguing about, there are a lot of intriguing things about these resolutions, they're really specific and well written, is the resolution to amend Article 1, which sort of takes this unicameral idea and takes the good piece about it, the suggestion that, gee, we really should have the House of Bishops and the House of Deputies able to meet together to perform certain processes and to have certain types of conversations. And so it makes that more possible and easier to do. So that's something for your consideration.
Okay, so let's just all pretend it's Friday, July 3rd. We are flying our way back to Houston. So we're looking into our crystal ball. What's happened at General Convention about structure? How's the memorial? What's been the response? What about Trek? What about the Joint Commission? Just what do you kind of hear in your Episcopal conversations about what's going to happen, how all this shakes out?
Well, When I look into my crystal ball, Jimmy, no, I don't have one. But I think one of the things that comes up quite a lot in all of the restructuring conversations, or much of them, is about having a leaner structure, about shrinking the size of not just executive council, but sometimes people talk about general convention itself and all the various governmental committees and ways that we govern ourselves as the Episcopal Church. At the same time, every time that comes up, you do hear a lot of concern and a lot of people speaking about the importance of maintaining a diversity of voices at all levels so that we're hearing from laity as much as we're hearing from clergy, and that we're hearing from people from all over the Episcopal Church. And so I think for me, I don't think that the standing commissions and committees are all going to go away. I hope that in the future we'll find a way to leverage technology such that these voices can be heard and we can also shrink some of these committees down, but I don't think this is the year it's all going to happen.
I think I agree. I hope that in the context of General Convention, we'll have some sort of conversation about what a smaller structure might look like that still represents the diversity of the church. How do we provide for, I think we need to ask some very basic questions, like how are we providing for diversity now?
Hmm.
And is it possible within a smaller structure or a different looking structure to provide for diversity in deeper and more meaningful ways? So I hope we'll have that conversation. We're going to be having that conversation here, and hopefully we'll be hearing from some people who have things to add from different perspectives, from the perspective of Latino ministries, from the perspective of young adult ministries.
Right. And one of my big questions in all of this is, and I think in one of our conversations, Christine, you said this, was that that as we're looking at the power structure of the church changing, well, it's the powers that be that would have to make those decisions happen. And so it's that whole sort of sense of, are we going to be bold enough to vote ourselves out of a job? And that to me seems to be a little bit of the fear coming out of the Joint Commission proposals, that if you're in a power system, you don't necessarily want to give that up, because you know it's good to be the king, you know.
It's scary.
It is scary. Yeah. And I think that's when we're talking about boldness, is that this is a missionary age that we're entering. And I mean, and just even reflecting on myself as the rector of a church, some of the stuff is scary, because when you think about changing structures, even buildings and the ways we do things now, I think there's always a little bit of fear in there, the fear of the unknown about, well, how is it going to affect larger church? And then how does that affect me too? Because I think it's really easy for us to talk about, well, they need the change. Well, I mean, you know, Michael Jackson said it all starts with the man in the mirror. And so how does it start at my level?
Yeah. And I mean, I think the basic fact is that in order to carry out a proposal like the bold investment in church planting or in church revitalization, we're going to have to make some sacrifices in other areas. And so what are we willing to sacrifice in order to invest in a more missionally focused church? What are we willing to sacrifice? I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah, we'll see as we're winging our way back to Houston on July 3rd. So that's really, I think, the big piece of this General Convention and the big piece that the Episcopal Herald is very concerned about. Of course, there'll be lots of other issues that will come out, that will crop up around the task force on marriage, about some other things as well, which the Episcopal Herald will be covering in later editions of this podcast. So keep an ear out for that. But we really wanted to dive into what the Herald thinks is the big thing for this General Convention. Thank you for listening to this first edition of our podcast. I want to ask you to keep in touch with us. You can Check out our website, episcopalherald.com. Follow us on Twitter, at Episcopal Herald. Watch iTunes for this podcast. And send us an email, episcopalherald@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, fill out the Contact the Herald form, and then we'll pull out your best responses and put them under the letters to the editor page. And I want to thank Chase Carl for doing our music. He's the music director at Holy Comfort Episcopal Church. On behalf of everyone here at the Herald, thank you.